Brothers and sisters, welcome to episode 2 of Racks, Furs, and Feathers. I am your host, Brent Ruff. I was joined today by my co-host, Adam Peterson, and my father, Bruce Ruff Sr., a.k.a. Popsy. We talked a little history, whitetail history, a little APRs, a little wolves. It was a good time. I think you guys are going to learn a lot. So without further ado, here's episode 2. All right. So did Alex get a wildlife population survey?
He did not.
No? Seemed like a lot of the youth did for whitetail. I got one for turkey.
I did.
Did you? Did you fill it out?
Not yet. It's on the end table.
I just filled mine out 2 days ago.
Yeah. I filled mine out and put it in the envelope and have it all ready to go and haven't remembered to take it to work with me and drop it in the mailbox like a retard. So, but for all you people out there that are getting those things in the mail, if you haven't already got one, you should be getting one soon. If you bought a turkey license, you need to fill them out and get them in. It takes 5 seconds. Help out our boys in green. I mean, they do a lot of important work, and we need to help them out as much as possible. I mean, we're their boots on the ground, so that's how they determine, you know, quotas and
yeah, bag limits
and stuff like that.
Season lengths.
Right. You said did you turkey hunt this year?
No, I didn't turkey hunt. I got one for shooting that doe, though.
For what?
For shooting that doe. I got one for deer.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome, yeah. Because it's kind of crazy. Kind of leads into what we're kind of going into today. I want to kind of talk about APRs. But what I found pretty interesting is I started doing some research on them and, like, you know, when they started.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize how low the deer population got at one point. Popsy, I know you know.
Yeah, it's a lot more deer now than there was years ago. When I grew up here around as a kid, it was very rare to see a deer crossing the road
that
or anything
when,
else.
50s?
50s.
Yeah. And when was the first year you bought a license and went hunting?
Well, my first hunting was when I was 14. I was hunting in Wyoming, though.
Oh, that's right. Your first buck, 1965.
That was my first license. I didn't really buy a Michigan license because unless you wanted to make a trip, hunting wasn't that great around here.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it really wasn't. In Indiana, I was looking at their DNR website, and what I found kind of crazy is they had 1893 was the last reported whitetail deer killed made in Knox County. 1893, and then I think it was until 19, I got the number right in front of me here somewhere. Shit. Well, anyway, yeah, 1951 is when they had their first deer season after that. Wow. And it was for 3 days. 3 days in November with a 13% success rate. 13%, so.
Now, was that back before they had the deer management system?
Well, no, because back between 1934 and 1942, Indiana released 296 deer purchased for release from Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and North Carolina.
Okay.
I mean, for genetic diversity reasons, I'm sure, and, you know, obviously just to get more deer out there. By 1943, the deer population was only at 900 in the entire state of Indiana.
Wow.
That's ridiculous. I mean, you think about what it is now. You can't drive down the road.
You always see one on the side of the road that just got hit.
Either hit or they're in the fields everywhere. Right. I mean, it's just crazy. In 1956, Indiana did a deer trapping and relocation program that began with about 500 deer. And I think, again, that was genetic diversity trying to spread them out a little bit.
Right.
So we're to 1943, Indiana had 900 deer, and by 1975, the deer harvest was about 9,000. So growing a little bit, and then 1985, the deer harvest exceeds 32,000. So that tells you how quick them little fuckers will
reproduce.
Right. Right, they'll pop them out. I mean, a healthy doe, what do you think, about two fawns?
Yeah, two fawns.
For a good, healthy, well-fed.
Sometimes three, if you get lucky.
Right.
Lately, we've seen a lot of 2 and 3 deer births, a lot of does, you know, carrying 2 or 3.
Yeah,
fawns,
yeah,
I mean, with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and that's part of the reason I'm thinking back in your early days of hunting that shooting a doe was an absolute no-no, right?
Not very desirable, at least. I mean,
did they have doe tags?
I don't remember doe tags in their very early days. You know, I used to go out with my dad in the 50s just as an observer to learn how to hunt and whatnot. I don't remember does, at least in the group that we hunted with. Either they weren't available or nobody really wanted them. But a lot of you talk about harvesting going up. There's more factors than just the number of deer out there. There's the number of hunters. You know,
right.
they hadn't created the big interest. Back in the day, if you wanted to go deer hunting, you made a trip up north. So local hunting wasn't a big deal. I don't know how the accessibility was either for getting out there. And certainly the methods have changed. I mean, when I was a kid, you wanted to go deer hunting with your dad, you'd walk around the woods and you'd find a nice stump to sit on or sit behind.
Sit down, be still, shut up.
There was no blinds, there was no tree stands, because tree stands were illegal. You couldn't be so many feet up in the air. It was an unfair advantage for the game.
Huh. So you couldn't even climb like in a crotch of a tree?
15 feet sticks in my head.
Really?
You couldn't be up that high or any higher than that.
That's pretty interesting.
Of course, the weaponry and the
technology for bows.
Technology, the deer sense,
Every
I can't imagine anybody putting deer pee in a bottle back then.
Right.
Right.
I mean, that just wasn't, why would you do that?
Right. You're doing what?
Yeah. How do you do that?
Yeah. It just all kinds of equipment have changed there, including the deer hunting vehicle.
Yeah.
In the 50s, if you wanted to see how the hunting was, you stood along the highway and you could see them drive by with a deer tied to the hood of a car. Pickup trucks weren't a big deal. Everybody drove a car or a panel truck, and you strapped the deer down to the across the of course then they had the headlights and the hood and a little dip in there, and you'd throw the deer in there and tie him down or up on the roof. That's how they tracked them at the Mackinac Bridge. They had counters sitting there. They'd count the number of deer on top of cars as they come across the bridge. Well, now they're stuck in a trailer or in the bed of a pickup.
Was the lack of deer hunting, were there other things to hunt back then, like small game? I know there used to be...
Well, small game, my favorite hunting back when I was a kid was pheasant hunting.
Right. There used to be a much
pheasant hunting was big. Pheasant hunting was enormous around here. Mm-hmm. It was a big deal. You'd have a big hunter's breakfast downtown on opening day in October for pheasant hunting, and everybody went out and we'd hunt every day for those 2 weeks or 15 days of pheasant season.
Back when there were pheasants.
Popsy was running his own dogs.
We raised bird dogs and do the pheasant hunting. Deer was it was just different approach.
Does were like I said. I mean, that wasn't you didn't see a big doe harvest back then. Which is crazy, because and I was also looking and in Michigan, what I found, the current combo regulations, the combo tag, mm-hmm. that was adopted in '98. But what I found funny was, between 1991 and 98, you could buy four tags. Bag limit of two,
right?
$2.
Yep.
But you could buy four tags, two of the gun, two of the bow, which I thought was just crazy. I'm like, how the hell are you supposed to enforce that? You know what I mean? So like, it's like a poacher's paradise.
Right.
So I thought that was interesting, and I sent Popsy a text asking if he remembered that, and his response was pretty funny. But before I get into his response, I think we need to address this. And I have a feeling that you've been waiting for this moment for a long time here, Popsy. We need Popsy is the only person sitting at this table that has never shot a doe.
I am proudly a buck hunter.
and he never misses an opportunity to remind us.
And in my whole family, there's only two other buck hunters. That would be my oldest son and my oldest grandson.
Okay.
Which we discussed, his oldest grandson shot the deer with no nuts that we talked about last week.
Well, technically, I'm still calling him a buck hunter. It's questionable biologically. But.
Yeah, we didn't get into the anatomical bullshit.
But. Right.
But you were also talking about, back in the day, other opportunities for hunting.
Right.
Going back to the deer, in the 50s, if you went up north and you bought a deer tag, which back in the day you had to display it on the back of your... But when you bought a deer tag, that came with a bear tag.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
So when you went to the UP, you could kill a deer and a bear on the same tag.
Bear hunts. I mean, unless you're baiting up there, though, it's kind of hard to...
Well, you had a better chance of seeing one up there, you know, while you were hunting, as opposed to...
I guess. But, well, shit, you're going up in November, though. I mean, we've seen them denned up in November.
Well...
It all depends on
but
the weather.
If you saw one, you got one.
Right. Right, yeah. So, so his response to that text. So I said, you know, I asked him about that, and his response was hilarious. He says, yeah, and back in 1986, the sons of bitches were trying to wipe out all the does and cost me an 8-point. You want to tell that story?
It did.
Time Popsy
I'm not sure the year. I'm thinking it was 85 or 86. They had a deal where you bought your deer tag, and with that deer tag, you could take two deer. The first one could be a buck or a doe.
Okay.
The second one had to be a doe. Hmm. So.
That was their answer to try and get more people.
So
to
my
does or?
Right. So I'm sitting. Like I always learned how to hunt, sitting behind my stump, waiting, and I could hear a herd of deer coming through the woods, crashing and banging, and there was three or four does come through, and a nice 8-point right behind them, chasing them. Mm-hmm. So I'm waiting and waiting, and I said I'm taking that buck, and the thick was. I had one opportunity for this deer, and that was between two trees when they cross, and I'm watching the does go through my window of opportunity. Doe, when that buck come through, I let loose a 12-gauge slug, and I knocked him right square on his ass, and he's laying there with his feet up in the air, and I said, well, I got that one.
Right.
And as I'm looking out of the corner of my eye, I see one of the does stopped, turn around. This is opening day of that year. And I'm looking out of the corner of my eye. I said, well, I says, I can take a buck and a doe. I can have my season over here in the first 20 minutes.
Right.
So I turn around to take a shot at the doe. And as I pull the bead up, I hear a noise and something out of my other corner. And I looked, and that buck had jumped up and ran through the thicket before I knew what happened, and never could get a shot at it through the thicket. So I immediately ignored the doe and went down, and I could see there's a big puddle of blood down where the buck came through. And I saw my slug embedded in a tree. And I go, well, I nailed him good.
Right.
Blood, I'm tracking blood through the brush. And I track him through all the brush, and I finally got him out into a field, and I tracked blood out into the field. And then there was a big puddle of blood, and then it stopped. I could not determine his next step.
Oh, no.
And I called all the friends I knew that were around, and we scoured the field all the way through dark. Never came up with him. And I said, well, I'll come out first thing in the morning and start tracking again.
Sure.
Well, it snowed during the night. So I get up and I said, well, now I can't track where I came from. So I'm just started doing a circle, and I finally found in the snow where there was three doe had laid in the snow, and the buck had laid on his side with a big blood spot right where his neck was.
Yep.
So I shot him right in the neck. And then you could see where they got up and through the snow went forever without dropping a blood. So by taking my eye off that buck to look at that stupid doe, he got, now had I been kept my eye on him, he got up, I'd have hit him again.
Sure.
But I lost, it was a nice.
And Popsy gets superstitious about that kind of shit.
And you never thought about shooting a doe again.
So that was the first and only thought I ever had of taking a doe.
Yep.
And, well, he also put a small doe in his freezer one time from a friend of his, and that's the curse of Bambi happened.
Oh, my God. I forgot about that, yeah. Yeah, we're up north, and I had, through the years, gotten some nice bucks. Mm-hmm. And I had a nice, my first Michigan 8-point was, it wasn't huge, it was a 121 score.
That's a nice buck.
And so I had it mounted and had it in my living room above my TV on the wall for 10 years, mm-hmm, or more. And we came back from up north, and my friend had shot a small doe. I always tease him. I said, well, you're going to get two or three sandwiches out of this deer.
Sure.
We came home with other deer, and he says, I've ran out of room in my freezer. Can you put this deer in your freezer? I says, well, number one, I don't keep does on my premises.
Right.
I says, why would you're asking me to put Bambi in my freezer?
Not up.
He says, just for a couple of days. I said, all right. So he puts it in my freezer out in the garage, mm-hmm, and that night, sound asleep in the middle of the night, I hear this enormous crash out in my living room.
Oh no!
My wife and I got out of bed and grabbed a firearm because I thought somebody's in my house.
Yeah.
Came out in the living room, and my nice deer head that had hung on my wall for over 10 years was laying in the middle of the living room floor. Now, this this mount, if you could imagine, it was on a round screw,
yeah,
with a slot. Oh, and yeah, a downward,
locks down in it.
It's locked. It would have been a chore to take this thing off the wall. I said, well, for some reason that screw had pulled out of the wall. I said, that's impossible because I put it into a stud.
Right, right.
I look at the wall, it's still there. Screw's still there.
Somehow that mount had come off the wall.
That mount lifted up and jumped over my TV without hitting it, laid in the middle of my living room floor. I know that was the curse of Bambi.
Yeah, that's enough to make me superstitious.
So
that's crazy.
We don't do that anymore.
Yeah, Pops, you don't fuck with does, you know?
Hey, man, no, there's reasons.
So, yeah, basically, it went from not really having many deer around at all to we're shooting bucks, not shooting does, to right. 85, 86, obviously they're working to.
That was a 1-year experiment, by the way.
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah, yeah. So, yeah. Anyway, but so now you're at the point where you're trying to take out the doe population to help, because, I mean, they do damage crops and other things. And insurance companies don't like them for,
now, I've always heard
running into cars and shit.
That there is an insurance racket out there where they either pay the DNR, enough money, or pay the state to actually increase the amount of kill tags allowed in an effort to decrease the amount of deer that people are running into. I wouldn't believe it to be true. I've always heard it to be a rumor that the car insurance companies are in this racket with the deer management agencies, and that's why they do it, so they don't have to pay so much money in claims from people hitting, deer on the road or deer running into somebody.
It's an enormous cost for the insurance company.
Absolutely. And they try to curtail that by increasing the amount of kill tags that people are allowed to buy.
Right, right.
So,
Yeah, and then like we said, I mean, a good way to manage any population is, you know, through the female. But it's just, you know, it's amazing to me how far we came as far as, you know, numbers wise in a relatively short time. And now we're at the point where we have antler point restrictions, and you know, we were letting these things grow, which is great.
Right.
Here's my thing with it. You kind of got two sides to your antler point restriction.
Yep.
Everybody likes big antlers. Everybody likes big bucks. I mean, they're awesome. And everybody wants to see more of them. Only way to do that, you know, antler point restrictions, what that does is it increases your survival rate of your year and a half bucks, right? Which obviously, you know, a lot of those are, you know, they could be spikes, four corns,
right?
Your 6 points, whatever, but they're small deer. Give them a chance to grow, and they're, I mean, they could do great things, right? So, but then you have the guy that only gets to hunt 2-3 days a season.
Right.
So then that gets a little tricky. I mean, around here we have the combo tag, which you can shoot a buck of, it's in any size, and I think you can even take a doe in bow season.
Correct.
With your unrestricted tag.
Correct.
Your restricted tag has to have, your buck has to have 4 points or more on one side, so basically an 8 point or bigger. But there's counties in Northwest Lower Peninsula where they have mandatory antler point restrictions for, you know, all the way across the board. Up there, I actually have a list of those counties somewhere, but it's 12 of them, and they can, it's 3 points or more on one side. And we hunt up there in Lake County. By Baldwin.
Yep.
But yeah, 3 points or more on one side, and then of course the combo is still, you know, the restricted is still the same restriction. Right. But and I gotta tell you, man, it's been working. Because back in 2012, the deer management units in the Northwest Lower Peninsula were they surveyed them. They asked 2,100 people if they would like to see some sort of antler point restriction
sure.
be implemented. 80% response rate, which is pretty damn good. And in 2012, it was 68.5% yes, 31.5% no.
So definitely more people in favor of it.
Yeah, I'm thinking those 31.5 would be the guys that don't get to go out very often.
Right.
And or the guys coming up to deer camp, they're not really trying to manage a herd. They just want to put meat in the freezer. You know,
sure.
they're not really interested in, you know, they're taking the big bucks at home.
I've heard my grandpa talk about even, he used to have a cabin up there in Baldwin, and he said that when that first started up there, you would see a lot of these, a lot of guys would kill these little scuzzy bucks, you know, the little ones, and it was hard to hunt up there because there were more hunters, it seemed like, than there were animals to hunt. So this allowed, like you said, some of the younger bucks to grow up, get a little more mature, breed, which is an important thing up there
exactly,
because
yep.
their numbers are so small to begin with. And he said that even this year, he can tell a difference when he goes up there. He sees more deer than he used to, and the deers that he sees are more mature bucks instead of just a lot of little small, you know, 3 point, 4 point spikes, things like that from people just wanting to put meat in the freezer. So it seems to overall have improved tremendously, you know, in that area.
Yeah, I could say firsthand, you know, I went up for, I'll take one, Eric. This one warm on me here. You just from personal experience hunting up there, we were at camp this year. Me and my brother Bobby decided to do things a little different than we had in years past. We've been hunting, what, 10 years now we've been going up there? 9 years?
Since 10.
Yeah, since 2010. Before that, we used to go up in the UP, up by Lake Ogebic, which we'll talk about that later. But. So, you know, and we'd go up every year, and we'd always used to joke, you know, it's like, we're giving up some of the best hunting in Michigan here in Southwest Lower Michigan.
Right.
To go up to deer camp and not see any fucking deer,
right.
you know? And, if you, and if you did, like, I mean, that 1 year, what we saw, it was over 100 baldies, right? 150 or something doe between the five of us.
Well, the first year I saw 21 doe, yeah.
Yeah, and then that was the year that they had a pretty large doe quota, didn't they release a lot of tags, just nobody got any in our camp?
Yeah, we didn't have one or two, if any.
Yeah, so then, well, the next year everybody got a doe tag, right?
Yeah,
so we're
right.
Shit. But we saw no bucks, all baldies. And that was, yeah, that was 2010. So 2011, I don't, shit, we saw, you can count on one hand between five or six people how many deer we saw. And of course, they were all doe, right. Doe bucks. And that, it was kind of the same shit, different story. You know what I mean? Every for about a couple years. This last season, we went up, and me and Bobby, like I said, decided to do things a little differently. And this is four years into the antler point restrictions for those 12 counties, like I said. Okay. So we kind of go back on state land, kind of go back a little farther, figure we'll kind of check out some new territories, see what's going on. Me and my brother, we've each got good spots. And as I was setting up my blind, the day before the season, setting up my tent and everything, jumped a 120-inch buck out there.
No kidding.
Right. Bedded down with a doe right by the pines, stand of pines on top of that hill there where I was setting up. That is the biggest buck I've seen up there. I mean, dead or alive. I mean,
right,
that was the,
right.
Which yeah, got me real excited. And it's, and it seems to be situation, you know, everybody's saying the same thing up there. All the locals dig it, you know. I know there's a girl that's on my brother's fan page through one of his podcasts. And, you know, she was tickled to death. She shot a, it was about 120-inch 8-point up there. But she was going on in the comments about how her father and her dad said it's just, the hunting right now is amazing. Like, right. They haven't seen it this good in forever. I mean, it's some of the best hunting they've seen ever.
It's nice to see when they implement a program like that, it actually pay off, you know, 4 or 5 years later.
Oh, yeah.
Getting the return of the hard work that they're putting in, because it's not just a guessing game. They don't just go out and say, well, I think we should try this and just see what happens. A lot of times they actually put thought into it when they get the deer surveys that people fill out. They go on public opinion with a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, the deer surveys are really important. Like I said, that gives them a lot of information. I mean, because there's only so many COs and so many people sitting behind a desk. I mean, they need boots on the ground and you know, they count on us for that stuff. So and it's so easy to do. I mean, just like, you know, Ray was saying he was planning on doing his online. I kind of stumbled across that survey online when I was looking up all this stuff, and yeah, it's the same thing, super easy.
Right.
Super easy, only takes a second.
It's not meant to be cumbersome or, you know, it's really, if you can read the question, by the time you read the question, you know what your answer is going to be, you check the box, you move on. It doesn't take any time at all to do, and it's very important. It's us doing our part to help them, you know, provide for us a better experience, so.
Oh, yeah, so. And when they put these things in place, because I want to hear from the guy that doesn't like him.
Right.
You know, because I'm sure there's plenty of guys out there. Like I said, all of us sitting here, we got, you know, work, family, kids, all kinds of shit. So, I mean, and you try to find time to make it out as much as you can during deer season.
Right.
But there's seasons where, you know, fuck, I'm only going to make it a day or two, so I got to make the best of it. And it went under these mandatory APRs. You know, the guy sees a four corn, that's the only thing he sees.
And just to have the opportunity to put meat in the freezer, you know, that would kind of be, I could see where it would get under, but, you know, somebody's skin. Like, if you only got a couple days to hunt,
mm-hmm.
you want to make the most of it, but you have this APR, so you can't shoot that 4-point, you know. Or you see a spike, you know. I know a lot of guys that prefer to shoot the younger deer just because they taste better.
Well, there's that, and I mean, we got younger deer also. Let's face it, they're easier to kill.
Yeah.
I mean, they're naive. I mean, you could take a trumpet out there and use it for a deer call and probably get them to come walking right up in. I mean, and that's the truth.
Young and dumb.
Yeah, exactly. Young, dumb, full of cum, right?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I mean, so that's the guy I feel for. That's the guy I want to hear from. Because I know they're out there. And I mean, earlier, Pops, you said back in the day, if anybody wanted to go deer hunting, they went up north. You're talking UP, I'm assuming.
Well, or in the northern lower, you know, above the rifle line.
Right.
Because the wolf population was pretty much zero.
Wolves weren't an issue back then.
Exactly. So, I mean, and up north, in the UP here, I mean, it's kind of a unique landscape situation. The whitetails spend most of their summer and spring up in the Porcupine Mountains. Where is that from Lake Ogebe? It could be
north, little bit west maybe, but yeah. Straight north.
Yeah, on northwest of Lake Ogabe. So they spend the summers up there, beautiful country. Then the winter comes in, you know, and obviously up there they can be pretty harsh. And they start migrating down into these yard areas.
It's one of the only, as far as I know, only two areas where deer migrate. If you ever hear of deer migration, mm-hmm. most people haven't.
Right.
These deer are moving 50 miles every year.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
And it's nose to tail. I mean, I'm sure we've all seen the videos of like caribou.
Right.
When we first went up to the UP, hunting with the guys that have been up there for years since mm-hmm. the 40s, they'd say, "Well, we need to go up here and we'll sit on the migration trail." I said, "What are you talking about? You know, we have deer trails down here, but this right. is migration trails, where you look at the ground and it's you know 10 feet wide and a foot deep,
huh.
where it's just beaten down." Right. And they said, "When the weather gets bad and the porcupines." The deer come out of there and they go down through our area and down to Marinesco, where they have what they call the yarding area, where they're
cedar swamps,
where the deer come in there in the wintertime and it's mild and they stay under, it's like a canopy. And when the deer move, you could sit on that migration lane and see 100 or 200 deer come by in a day.
Right.
And they're just one after another after another after another.
And now I remember when, before the wolves got to be an issue, when you and Bobby used to go up in the early or late 90s, early 2000s, you guys would come home with a trailer full of deer, bucks, but I mean you're talking 3-inch racks, scuzzy little shits.
Sure, sure.
You know, but there was plenty of them.
Yeah,
plenty of them. And there, I mean, go up, you're almost guaranteed to fit, you know, you're not coming home with tag suit. And then the wolves came in. That changed the game for a
yeah, big time. I think the wolves did good and bad. The worst thing about the wolves is a wolf will kill because they like it.
Yeah.
They're not going out, "We need to get a deer today because we're hungry.
Right.
Let's go out and kill these 30 deer because it'll be a fun day."
Right.
So they get in these yarding areas where there's hundreds of deer in these canopies, and they'll mm-hmm. go in and just wipe them out. And they did that for several years.
Ducks, sitting ducks.
Yeah.
And that really threatened the whole population. On top of, you get two or three bad winters up there, really affects them.
And that knocks them down too.
But the good thing about the wolves is I think they corrected some genetic mutations.
Well, let's talk about the last buck you took from up there. The last year we went, shot a, it was 8-point, right?
Yeah, nine. It was 8.
It was an 8-point, and its neck, we measured it that one day.
It was huge, a huge buck.
Oh, my God, yeah.
With a perfect 8-point rack.
Hmm.
And that was almost unheard of up there.
Right.
In 2003.
It'd be like shooting a booner down here.
Right.
Yeah, in 2003, everybody would get all the racks. For a period of a few years, were all small, odd point, like you didn't get a nice 6-point or 8-point,
right.
you got a 3-point or a 5-point.
And that's
right.
partially because of food availability and overpopulating.
And the antlers were not straight, they would always lean. And just step back a second. You could always tell the difference between the local deer and the migrating deer.
Right.
The local deer had some genetic problems. When the migration came through, you saw better deer.
Bigger deer, much bigger deer.
Bigger deer, better racks. So there was a genetic mutation in the local area.
Right.
I think the wolves corrected that over the course
quickly,
of a few years.
Nature usually has several ways of correcting itself when things go awry like that, either through wolves coming in, building up the wolf population to decrease the deer population, corrects the problem you're talking about with genetic issues that they were having, but it also kind of resets things. It lets the deer that do survive have access to more food, less competition to get to it, less scuzzy deer around.
Right.
meaning
Darwinism. I mean,
yeah. They're survival of the fittest, and sometimes it takes a situation like the wolves to come
but,
in.
But I will say, after 6 or 8 years of the wolf issue, the migration came to a screeching halt.
Which also, I mean, it hurt economically.
Right.
I mean, that shit. Berglin is the town closest to us. We used to cruise in there every now and then. I mean, you go now, it's, fuck, we haven't been there in years, I guess. But the last time we were there, I mean, it's whatever. There was like one restaurant, you know, everybody kind of went to, charging $5 for some mayonnaise. But that place closed. I mean, basically all that was left was a damn post office and a bar. You know, I mean, and the root cellar, we used to go to the root cellar and have dinner, and they used to have elk wandering around. It was a DNR check station, too. Mm-hmm. Really nice place. That place closed down completely. I mean, a lot of those little towns and shit thrived off of deer season.
Right.
Because like Bopsy said, back in the day, if you wanted to go hunting, you're going to the UP. Yep. You know, so everybody had cabins and shit up there. The wolves came in. I mean, so there was a huge drop in deer numbers there for a couple of years, so... What are you going to do if you own a cabin up there? The hunt ain't worth the shit. If you live down here, I mean, that's a 10-hour drive. Right. You sell the fucking thing, right?
And I understand introducing the wolves. They thought, you know, this is a good idea. Mm-hmm. But I think it got so far out of hand so fast, made their head spin.
Right.
They put a few wolves. They tagged them. They knew where they were. A few years into it, you start questioning it. And the DNR says, well, there's only 455 wolves in all of the UP.
Right.
I said, all of the UP, 455 wolves. I said, boy, that's strange because I just saw six of them on the 40 acres I'm in.
Right.
Yeah. Well, shit, there was one morning I was going out to my blind, you know, middle of the North Woods. Oh, shit, I was 18 at the time. I think it was my first year up there, actually. And snow on the ground. Bobby drops me off first. I doubled up with him, drops me off. I'm standing there like this, you know, and, you know, he drives off, so it's dead quiet.
Right.
Flip on my flashlight, and there's a fairly fresh set of wolf tracks in my footprints from the night before all the way to my blind.
Oh, that's a good feeling.
Sniffed around in my blind for a while. I mean, that gives me an uneasy feeling. When we were out there and we heard him going nuts that one day when I sat in your blind after you shot that 8-point.
Right.
Oh, that's right, because we were setting up. Yeah, funny story. We're setting up Hopsy's blind, you know, is a lemonade stand, is what he calls it.
Yeah.
And I'm putting out his, just kind of scouting, and I'm like, what the hell? There's all these bones everywhere. And like, yeah, it was crazy. And then we found a hole that was obviously used for a den, what, 10 feet behind where you were sitting.
Yep.
So Popsy sits out there with his, and then he shoots his Ting 69 buck. Popsy stretches his legs and, it was either me and Bobby gave him a bottle of piss. Now, like, Popsy was the go sit on a stump, be at the right place, right time, sit down, shut up, you know. Never used any of that shit. Gave him a bottle of Tinks, stretches his legs, wanders out there, see what this does. And then, 10 minutes later? He said it sounded like a four-wheeler coming through the woods. Brat, 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 brat. Boom! So he shoots that one. So he's done.
Oh, it was it was not that easy.
That's right. You had to maneuver.
I was sitting there freezing. Yeah. So in the mid-morning, I'm not seeing anything. I thought I heard some crashing way over, so I'm taking a walk to warm up my legs.
Oh, yeah.
And I just dropped a few drops of Tinks, went and sat down, and it wasn't 10 minutes later. It's 10:30 in the morning, and up there, you can only run your four-wheelers in the woods from 11 o'clock till 2 o'clock. So it was a little after 10. I'm hearing this. I go, holy shit, somebody's running a four-wheeler up here, and it's way too early. So I set my gun down, and I look out the other end of my blind trying to identify this sound.
Right.
And I go, what the hell? And I went to sit back down, I looked, and this big 8-point was 15 yards from my blind, following my Tinks. And I, oh man. So then I'm, and I'm, in the meantime, I'm making rackets, sticking my head out the window. Oh, yeah. Don't even have my gun.
Because you think it's a four-wheeler out there.
I think somebody's messing around in the woods and making so much noise. So I'm throwing flaps and looking and leaning, and this deer's 15 yards away. Not so oblivious to what I'm doing.
Right.
So I reached out and get my gun, and I had to wait a few minutes and get a little farther away. And but yeah, I was sold on that stuff.
yeah, he shot the shit right out of that one. That was a huge, huge buck. You might have seen it last week downstairs, that one, that giant ass neck. So beautiful. I forgot where the hell I was going with that.
About the wolves.
Yeah, the wolves. Yeah, so he obviously weeded out the non-hackers, right?
Yep.
So, yeah, I've been wanting to go back, actually. It's been years, like about 8 years that we've been hunting in Baldwin. I want to make a trip back to the UP and kind of see how that's going up there, because it seemed like it was going in the right direction. Having wolves on the landscape, I think, is a good thing, but they need to be managed just like everything else does.
Right.
I mean, you sit up there with that migration, they go in those cedar swamps, it's like shooting fish in a barrel. Yeah, I mean, they're easy pickings, and as the wolf population grows, I mean.
Was it this year or last year they just introduced that wolf season? It's like a two-week season on wolves.
That was, 2014.
I know it's been recent. I don't know.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. Steven Ranella on the Meat Eater podcast does a much better job of bringing attention to this kind of stuff on the legal end, but it sounds like there's a battle between state and feds for management of wolves. It's kind of like they keep moving the goalposts kind of thing. This is our, recovery objective.
Right.
Well, they hit that. Quickly. Went way past that.
Right.
And they're still listed as an endangered species.
Right.
Which, when you do that, you can't manage them. So I think there was something a couple years ago where they did get delisted. Michigan was able to open a season on them. It was really short, though. It was a couple days, and it was really expensive if you wanted to get a tag.
Yeah,
it was. But I think the quota was only like 48 wolves, and it was only so many in certain counties. And you had to check in online before you went out, after you went out.
I think they misunderstood the containment, too. You hear stories of UP tag wolves showing up in Wisconsin, rural Wisconsin,
and
northern lower Michigan. We've had a few years where, that's separated by Great Lake water.
Right.
And there's been a couple years where that has been frozen solid.
Yep.
Well, nothing will keep a wolf from walking across that.
The DNR published that they confirmed a male gray wolf scat in the lower peninsula.
Mm-hmm. But I thoroughly believe they will come across that ice.
Sure.
That's narrow passage.
It's like the UP is connected to Canada, and there's no border wall that goes across there that will stop a wolf from coming from Canada into the UP. So I know when we were up in Canada, in Nipigon, Ontario, when you harvested an animal, we were up there bear hunting, you took it to the carcass pile, which was where this guide had designated an area in the woods where you put your carcasses, because he also guided wolf hunts. And the wolves would come in at night and eat your carcass, and there'd just be bones everywhere leading up to, the pile where you're supposed to keep them. And they didn't have a problem with deer management up there, as far as I know. They had open season on wolves the same time they had bear season, and I know that the wolf population up there was such that as far as they do migrate, as far as they wanted to migrate, it wouldn't be anything for them to come down into the UP, Wisconsin.
Right.
The Dakotas are up there, anywhere along the northern border. So I don't believe that, like you said, if you get a hard ice, nothing's going to stop them from crossing that ice to get to the Lower Peninsula.
And they're not shy.
No.
I've sat in the woods and have them run right by me.
Yep.
In the summertime, this was in July, I was four-wheeling down a trail So I'm not sneaking around. I'm riding a four-wheeler,
right.
And I had one jump right out in front of me and stare me down.
Yep, because they are, in their environment, they are the apex predator. Nothing eats a wolf. A wolf will eat anything else in the woods it can catch or kill just for fun. So they don't have that fear of us that we might have of them because they don't understand, you know, that they might never see another human. They might see you on a four-wheeler one time, and that'd be it. They don't have the fear like a coyote would.
Yeah, you always hear people say, like, oh, that animal's so stupid, or that squirrel's so stupid. Why is he just standing here? He's letting me get so close.
Right.
Maybe he doesn't know what the hell you are.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
Is he going to eat me? Is he going to give me something to eat?
We like to take our own, you know, perceptions and ideas about things and try to apply them to animals sometimes, and it oftentimes isn't that complicated.
Right.
They might not know what you are. They might see you as a food source.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
And, you know, you earlier you said about wolf reintroduction. I actually read that it wasn't, heard that it wasn't that the Michigan DNR brought the wolves in. The wolves came in on their own.
No, they tagged them and released them.
From where? Where did they get them?
I'm not sure where they got them. I'm thinking Northern Rockies, but I don't quote me on that because I'm not sure. But they tagged them and released them.
Because,
so they could track them.
And that's what I've always been told. And then somewhere along the lines, I can't even remember where it came from, but somebody had told me that they...
I'm sure that there were some that infiltrated.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah.
But there was a planned tag and release wolf program.
A base population they were trying to establish. That they, like you said, they tagged them so they could track them, figure out where they're going, what they're doing.
Because in the early days... You know, you were told don't touch these wolves, and they would track them down. I mean, the local people would see them and shoot them, and all of a sudden you'd have somebody knocking at your door.
Right.
Say, we see you. You know, we track this collar or this tag, and you know it's here.
Right.
So and then you hear stories as well. You know, the locals always used to joke, well, if you're going to shoot a wolf, shoot him in the stomach so he'll run. And go away and die, and they can't track you.
Yeah, or shoot them in the leg, and the pack would kill them.
Right.
Yeah, the locals, at least where we were at in the UP, they did not care for the wolves. There was a couple people we seen wearing T-shirts. And I love UP wolves. I smoke a pack a day. I mean, so it really, really hurt the economy up there. But it did do good for the hunting.
Right.
You know? So that's
there are some small-time farmers that paid the price.
Yeah.
You know, you read about these poultry farmers or the people with a herd of goats that, you know, they come in and kill a whole herd, all their chickens, turkeys, goats.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the state, I think, is supposed to shell out some cash when that happens, too.
Maybe.
Yeah, I'd hope so.
I'd hope so, too, but I bet you'd be hard-pressed to get an actual check in the mail. Mm-hmm. You'd probably have to call a guy, fill out a paper, wait, fill out another paper. You know, there'd be a lot of litigation, I'm sure, to get whatever compensation the state would deem necessary.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times they don't care. They just see that as, you know, you need to do a better job of keeping your animals locked up. You need to do a better job of keeping your goats secure. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's
No, yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, it again, I just kind of bring this back kind of almost full circle. It's... The deer population was as low in this area as 900 deer in the state of Indiana, for Christ's sake. I mean, that's ridiculous. And that's after 296 were brought in, you know, and going 58 years without a deer season to...
Well, there's, you know, been a lot of highs and lows in the deer population through the last couple hundred years, you know. When you look about building the railroad...
Which is why that number was so down so low.
Plus, don't forget feeding two huge armies in the Civil War.
Right.
They sent people. They had many people that would go around and kill everything in the woods to feed these people.
And there was a market for it. You know, a lot of people don't realize deer hides. Back then, if you killed a deer in the summer, that hide they used that for like Carhartts.
Mm-hmm.
It was light. You know, so they wore it during warm weather, and it was durable. So, yeah, I mean, there was a huge market for that kind of shit. And it wasn't just whitetail. I mean, it was, like you said, I mean,
everything. And then, they had they had packs of hunters that would come through like Pennsylvania and Ohio and kill everything that walked in the woods.
Right, right.
And they drove that deer herd down extremely low.
Big time. And then, you know, it just shows you what a good job the states have done to bring all this back. I mean, we're living the dream right now, man.
Absolutely.
I mean, deer hunting right now is as good as it's been, from my understanding, in 50, 60 years. I mean, this is great.
Right.
And these antler point restrictions, I think the DNR is doing a great job. I don't think they could do much better as far as trying to make the experience awesome. You know, for people, so they're seeing more bucks, bigger bucks. There's plenty of deer. You can still fill your freezer with doe. I mean, doe tags, at least around here, I don't remember what the code was.
Well, you know, deer,
this DMU alone, it was
deer
like
management has gone from a dream to an exact science,
exactly.
And they've done well with it.
Yeah, I mean, they're doing outstanding. And like these surveys and that, like you said before, I mean, that's a huge part of it, and that really helps them out. And you know, and it's not like they're like I said, they're not force feeding these antler point restrictions on anybody.
Right.
These mandatory ones, as far as, you know, like from the Northwest 12. I told you, you know, they surveyed 2,100 people. Well, they just did it again. Did like a 5-year checkup.
Right.
Again, it was sent to 2,100 people. Another 80% response rate. I remember last time everybody, it was 68.5% wanted the antler point restrictions. 31.5 said no. After 5 years, it's 76.6% yes. 23.4% no. So
it's a significant increase.
I
think that comes with, you know, benefits and technology. Everything is moving so fast now compared to how it used to. It's a lot easier to get real numbers and apply those real numbers to an idea or a program that is to benefit the people that are in the program, like us, the hunters that help pay for it. And a lot of that too is a resurgence in people wanting to be outdoors. When I was growing up, you know, it was go outside and play because my parents didn't want me in the house. Now you got 2 or 3 year olds that know how to work a tablet or a smartphone better than adults. And it's, everything's kind of at the tip of your fingertips now. Mm-hmm. And it didn't used to be like that. So as the technology rolls along and it provides the benefits, we get to reap the bounty of that, you know, with our antler point restrictions or just in more aggressive management policies that benefit the hunter, I guess.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, well, you know, another factor has got to be that deer hunting has the same thing going on that baseball has going on.
Right.
They're losing the youth.
Yeah.
And you know, like I said, when I was a kid, I was eight years old, I was sitting with my dad learning how to hunt.
Absolutely.
And society has kind of, maybe my kids shouldn't be around this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And there's been a lot of pushback on that. Now they're trying to counter that with some of these youth hunts,
mm-hmm.
which I think are a great idea. I'm not crazy about the season they picked. This warm weather hunting, I don't think is great. September is not good deer hunting.
Not even just for seeing deer, but for handling.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I wish they could tweak that somehow, but the society has just taken youth and saying, you know, when I was a kid, we go out and we couldn't wait to go out and play baseball in the summer or run home from school and watch the World Series.
Right.
Well, now, hell, a kid's in bed when the World Series comes on
right.
now. They're losing the kids' interest. Now you're seeing it in football. Well, I don't think my kid should take a hit like that. He might damage his brains.
Yeah,
And, you know, maybe we shouldn't put the kids in the woods because, number one, he has to be around a firearm, and we don't want that.
Right.
There's got to be more fathers taking interest in pushing this program, getting the kids interested, which will stimulate the rest of the programs developing.
Absolutely.
But if you don't, if it gets, because, you know, the number of Michigan hunters is way down.
Well, it's a lot easier now to, instead of going out in the woods after an actual deer to dial up a deer hunting game on your phone
right.
or on a tablet, and to sit inside right. in a climate controlled room where you get the same experience, or they think is the same experience, you know, oh yeah, I'm a deer hunter, I shot 3 bucks this weekend on my couch
yeah.
instead of going yeah. out in the woods and putting in the work.
You know, and accessibility is a factor. I think the states are doing a better job of getting public land, mm-hmm. turning private land into public hunting.
Should be the HAT program.
And there's got to be more of that, because accessibility and liabilities got to be a real problem.
And there's a big issue. Yeah, you talk about opportunities. Our friend, TJ, I mean, he's one of them. He wants to go, doesn't have anywhere to go. I mean, it asking permission to hunt on somebody's land isn't exactly easy. Mm-hmm. It's awkward.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, Indiana has a permission slip you fill out.
Really?
Yeah, pretty cool. anyway, but yeah, and then, you know, the HAT program and the public land, like, a lot of people don't realize. I mean, there's a lot of people that are cringing right now that I'm about to say this, but you can hunt lumber properties.
Yeah.
I mean, it'll say private property, but, you know, Pike Lumber, there's a couple other ones. You can hunt those.
Yep.
I mean, so a lot of people just don't know about that.
Yeah, but you go through two or three generations of declining hunters. You know, if this generation starts going back, they're not going to work with their kids.
Right.
And then
exactly.
those kids aren't going to work with their kids, and pretty right. soon...
You lose the fundamentals.
And that's where I was going with that. You got a guy that wants to go, you know. So somebody like has a kid and wants to take him out. Same situation. Doesn't have anywhere to go. Doesn't know about the HAT program or
right.
or anything like that to get his kid out to get him into this tradition and you know this lifestyle. You know, I mean it's a dying tradition, unfortunately. I mean, hopefully we can try to combat that a little bit here.
Well, there's more success now. You know, there's channels specifically devoted to being outdoors.
Yeah.
There's more money in advertising for Realtree, for, you know, Matthews Bows, things like that, that try to keep the interest of the public in the sport. But a lot of that too is so commercial that people don't want to go out and spend $1,000 on a
right. Bow. If you're going to have to go into a canned hunt.
Right. Right.
It's going to be cost prohibitive.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to realize the same results going
right.
out on your own. It could be a little deceiving.
And what's tricky too is a lot of these hunting shows, you know, for people that are trying to get into hunting, they're watching these shows and, you know, they're killing
monsters.
Boone and Crockett
yeah.
deer, you know, and,
right.
all, and so that's what they expect when they go out there, and they don't realize it. You know, it's seeing deer of that caliber.
Doesn't happen
it's
every time.
It's very difficult. They didn't get
yeah.
that big by being dumb.
They have to
right.
teach a kid, you know, you may spend 5-6 days in the woods and see nothing.
Yeah.
And then you're going to see something.
And I think that you need those days where you go out and you work hard and you don't get anything from it to make you appreciate the day that you go out and you get a...
appreciate the suck.
You sit for 2.5 hours and, you know, you finally
yeah.
get a 10-second shot at a deer that you might never see again. You know, it's the work that we put in to get the animal to be in the position to harvest it that we get the benefit from killing the animal, yes, but when you go out and you don't get to kill something, you go out and you realize that there's more to it than just going out and killing. You don't see something every time you walk in the woods. You know, it you learn things. You learn, you know, self-respect, self-reliance, and that maybe things don't always work out the way that you want them to, and you have to be able to adjust yourself.
And God forbid you miss.
Yeah,
well,
that happens too. There's a lot of things that we can take away from it, but these are things that kids won't
mm-hmm.
necessarily learn because they're not out enjoying it in the woods with someone to teach them.
Right, exactly.
So.
No, yeah, so the DNR is doing a great, in my opinion, of all these programs, and like Popsy said, the early seasons and stuff, and I kind of agree with them. That warm weather hunting, I don't really agree with, but,
yeah.
you know, I guess it gives them a fair shot to get out there and get the jump on them.
Yeah, I don't even get crazy over 1st of October hunting.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, we don't hear the end of that. One of us shoots a deer in October.
You guys are goddamn idiots. It's 68 degrees. What are you going to do with this deer?
Yeah. Right.
Right.
Yeah, no, that's why we need to build that freezer. But you know, we get her done. And like I said, the state's doing a great job of trying to involve more youth. They're doing a great job of trying to better the experience for everybody across the board, out of state, the locals, everybody. But like I said, I'd like to get the take on the guy that, you know, so goddamn busy he doesn't get a chance to get out but a couple, one or two days just to fill his freezer, and he's pissed off because he sees the same four corn in it, you know, in his hunt
spot,
and he can't shoot the damn thing, so he's not getting food in the freezer. Because I mean, and that's another thing with the youth, and people aren't eating venison,
right?
Even, you know what I mean. I know a lot of people, they shoot a deer, back straps, tenderloin, then summer sausage or you know what
sticks,
right? Which I mean, it is what it is. It's your meat, do what you want with it. But and then a lot of people like are they're afraid that they're not, their family isn't going to like it, or the kids don't want to try it, you know, or the wife doesn't want it in the freezer next to the good meat, you know. So that too, you know, every back in the day eating venison, dude, back in 1921 you could shoot an additional camp buck at deer camp just for meat.
Yep.
Oh, that's been more recent than that.
Well, it lasted for a while, but in 1921, that was, because in 1921, they established what a buck is legally. And then, they said you could take one more for a camp buck. But, I mean, that's just the times then. I mean, you don't do that anymore. I mean, we eat deer meat at deer camp, but, I mean, it's just not.
Well, that's, we're eating October deer in November camp.
Right. Yeah. But, I mean, my kids, we eat venison, I'd say at least twice a week.
Yeah.
Until we run out, you know, after deer season, of course. But, you know, roasts, burger, and there's so many things you can do with burger. Which, speaking of which, I guess we can kind of wrap this thing up here. Now that we're going into the recipes, because I want to make that an episode here in the near future. But speaking of which, so I want everybody to send me in whatever recipe you got, your hot tip, if you will. If you got something that's just make your mouth water, just send it in. We'll see what we can do. At least talk about it. And the APR guys, and I mean the guys that are kind of getting the shit end of the stick, I want to hear from you guys too. Our email is raxfurandfeathers@gmail.com. It's and, not N.
A-N-D.
Yeah, so shoot us an email, and we'll try to get that shit out here on the show, and we'll talk about it, and maybe even get back to you and ask you some questions. Am I leaving any ends open here?
I think you covered
everything. Keep an eye out for that Facebook page.
Yeah, the Facebook page is going to be I made one, and I was just telling Dad before we started here that I'm not tech savvy at all, believe it or don't. So I'm trying to figure this whole thing out as we go. I got to make it into an actual page that you guys can like and comment on. So, well, we'll get that up and going, and looking forward to hearing from you guys.
Yeah, let us know what you think.
All right, thanks. All right, boys and girls, that's it. That was episode 2. Join us next time for episode 3. We're going to be teaching you rooks how to save a little bit of money and butcher your own deer. So tune in for that. Special thanks to Eric and Michelle Fisher for letting us use their home to record episode 2. Special thanks to Kyle Palmoner for doing all of our editing. Special thanks to Bob Ruff and MBI Studios for helping us out and lending us some equipment to do this. Also, special thanks to Shane Yoder from PutThemInASong.com for writing that snazzy new intro music you guys heard. Check us out on Twitter at RFF Podcast and our Facebook page, Rax Furs and Feathers. Check us out, get a hold of us, and we'll see you next time on the podcast.